Stupid Facebook.
I know. Mark Zuckerberg and his fascist politics.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, our guest is John Reisner of the Satanic Temple of Minneapolis. We talk about atheistic Satanists and the quest for social justice.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Hi, welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover, joined as always by my co-host, Tim Wick.
Hail Satan!
And Molly Glover.
Hello. I couldn't top it.
I should have warned you ahead of time.
Sorry.
And if Tim's greeting wasn't a tip-off, we are joined by our guest, John Reisner.
Hello.
From the Satanic Temple of Minneapolis.
Yeah!
Hail Satan.
Hail Satan
and such.
and thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It means a lot.
Coming down. So I think first we should probably talk about what is the Satanic Temple of Minneapolis, because I'm sure people have preconceived notions like right off the bat, and they think they know what it might be, and they might even be half informed, but have a thinking.
And they're sitting here, they're going, "This is Geeks Without God. What the hell?"
Why would they have someone from a temple?
Yeah,
sure. Well, we are the local body of a international organization. We have some chapters in Europe, but you know, primarily based here in the grand old North America. We are an atheistic religious body. We do identify as a religious lack of supernatural component. So where we draw our inspiration is largely from the literary Lucifer of Milton and Shelley and the Romantics and the Lucifer of the Enlightenment.
I think fallen angel, as it were, more.
The voice of dissent. And, you know, I think it's often been called the eternal rebel in the face of arbitrary and tyrannical authority.
A tragic figure.
Yes, I suppose so.
But also a hero. Because he spoke up against tyranny. Is what it was.
Are you familiar with the Gaiman's Lucifer from Sandman, who got his own series that it's being adapted for a television show?
Yes.
Yeah, we saw the pilot.
How do you guys feel about the way like Gaiman portrays Lucifer? Is that in line with the Satanic Temple?
You know, I haven't heard any like outcry or anything. I think you know,
he's not LaVey as Satan,
right? You know, by and large, I think if you ask 100 Satanists what it means to be satanic, you'll get 100 different answers. So, you know, the interpretation of Lucifer can mean a lot of things to a lot of different people. It just depends on, you know, what drew you to, you know, Satanism in the first place, I suppose. You know, certainly with respect to pop culture, you know, representations of Lucifer, they've actually sort of been sparse, at least in my experience. You know, there's plenty of Satan and the devil and sort of this Abrahamic picture of
red skin, horns.
Yes,
right.
But in terms of, you know, Lucifer, who, you know, if you remember some time ago, there were those signs, that image went viral of the church that had on the signage, it said Satan was the first one to demand equal rights.
Yeah.
You know, as if it was some harsh indictment against, you know, Lucifer. So we've kind of taken that message and run with it and used that as the impetus behind, you know, virtually everything that we do in our personal and public lives.
I like that a lot.
So is there a little bit of loyal opposition kind of thing there? I mean, isn't that
opposition, and it comes from places that you probably wouldn't expect it to come from. Obviously, the religious fundamentalists, I mean, they hate everything, so.
They really do, including themselves.
Yes.
I mean, really.
Yeah, well.
Because they're sinners, and they're going
to
go to hell.
It's the Christian thing to do.
Right.
Yeah.
And they would go to hell were it not for Jesus saving them, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And
and they deserve it.
Yeah.
Well,
on
that we can agree.
Well, I'll be awarded some sort of certificate of merit if, you know, we all end up in hell. So you guys have my, you know, I'll
you're putting a good word for us?
Yeah, I guess.
I'll be we were Facebook friends, so hi, John, hi.
We know a guy, actually, there's a list.
I'm on the list.
I'll
put
you on the guest list.
On the list.
Yeah, but they, you know, there's certainly other satanic organizations, notably the Church of Satan, has been pretty vocal in their opposition to our existence.
What's the difference? I mean, I think it's... Because I honestly, I mean, I know a little, but not a lot.
I mean, they're, again, to an outsider, they would seem to be semantic differences, I suppose, but, you know, in practice, they're worlds apart. The Church of Satan was founded in 1966 by Anton LaVey, who was a former San Francisco Police Department police photographer and calliope player in a circus, and he was allegedly a lion tamer and all these sort of crazy, disparate things. And he founded, you know, what was essentially, you know, rational humanism with teeth, I suppose. It was, he drew a lot of his inspiration from Might is Right, which was, you know, authored by allegedly someone known as Ragnar Redbeard. And I think that was written in about 1896. And that really introduced the concept of, like, Lex Talionis and Fang and Claw, Might is Right, this sort of thing. So, you know, that's, the Satanic Temple has gone to great lengths to distance itself from that sort of, you know, the not necessarily the Might is Right attitude, certainly in respect to, like, defending our stance. You know, we're vociferous and we're, you know, we're proactive, but we're not social Darwinists. You know, we reject that whole notion of, you know, superiority on the basis of, you know, things that we know now scientifically. You know, our seven tenets are based around, you know, sensible concepts, one of which is that, you know, our beliefs of, and our understanding of the world has to conform to our best understanding of science instead of the other way around. And what we know now about things like reciprocal altruism and game theory sort of refutes this notion that, you know, the way to advance as an individual is to smite everyone who, you know, is a lesser being. So, you know, what we try to do is empower, you know, I guess disenfranchised and disillusioned and you know, vilified minority populations of all stripes, and introduce them to the concept of, you know, self-reliance and an unbending, you know, will to resist any sort of strictures or normative kind of, you know, limits that are placed on your behavior and that kind of thing.
One thing I remember, so I used to be a Wiccan, and I'm so embarrassed. And I remember one thing I had heard was that the main difference, and that one of the main tenets of Satanism being do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law, as opposed to and it harm none, do what thou wilt. And I wonder, I mean, is that something that is in the Satanic Temple, or is it a modified version?
Actually, do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law was from Aleister Crowley's The Lamb.
Right, yeah. Which was, LaVey was a very,
I think most of the people that came from, you know, came out of the kind of occult revival of the 60s and 70s drew a lot of inspiration from most of the sort of Western mystery schools. So, you know, all this, like the occult lodges from Europe in the 18th century and 19th century, you know, the Hellfire Club and all the Freemasons, the Rosicrucians, they sort of form this syncretic kind of bizarre mishmash of bullshit. And Crowley just went, yeah, this sounds good. I'm going to rebrand it.
Right.
So certainly I think LaVey was influenced by it. The Church of Satan has what are called the Nine Satanic Statements. And they're all very, you know, geared, I think, to appeal to 16 and 17-year-old boys.
That's...
So, you know, it's like, I'm going to fuck everything I can and kill stuff if it pisses me off. And, you know, I mean,
it struck me as anarchy. When you go to, like, a punk house and some kid's like, man, anarchy is the way we should be, because anarchy would rule. And you're like,
There's an incredible amount of hubris in the entire Satanic Bible. And, you know, moreover, I think on multiple occasions, LaVey kind of talked out of both sides of his mouth on a lot of things, but particularly in respect to ritual and the efficacy of ritual magic. The Church of Satan, you know, they have a book called The Satanic Rituals, which, you know, whether or not you choose to call it psychodrama, the fact remains that, you know, your average practitioner or your average, you know, 16-year-old kid with a, you know, Slayer t-shirt who picks up The Satanic Rituals is certainly probably doing this with the hope of invoking some kind of, you know,
supernatural
something to help him have power in a powerless world, because when you're 16 you've got nothing. I mean,
absolutely,
really, that's,
so that's, you know, it's confusing to the outsider. And they, and on the other hand, so LaVey will talk about the efficacy of ritual magic in multiple places in the Satanic Bible. He talks about, you know, ensuring that your intent is pure when you're, you know, invoking these things. And and then on the other side of the coin, he says, this is all bullshit, it's psychodrama, all we're doing is, you know, this is sort of an emotional enema, you know.
Really dependent who he's talking to.
Well, right. He was a master showman. I give him all the credit in the world for being a fantastic manipulator.
Yes.
And just the P.T. Barnum of evil. He was fantastic, you know.
Well, he and L. Ron Hubbard kind of have a tied origin story in that regard, don't they? I mean,
there's a really bizarre, actually, link between the two. Hubbard lived for a time with John Whiteside Parsons, who was the father of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of the most senior students of Aleister Crowley, and he started an Ordo Templo Orientis Lodge in Southern California. So, you know, I think Parsons and, by extension, Aleister Crowley affected, you know, Anton LaVey's understanding of the Western mystery tradition. And, you know, so L. Ron Hubbard was living with Jack Parsons and seeing all the accolades that Crowley was receiving and how he was, you know, basically just
printing money.
Right. And so he went, hey, I'm going to, you know, so there were these aliens and they put us in a volcano and then but you know what I always suggest when people are, you know, like lampooning any religion, really, Scientology in particular, which is, you know, patently one of the, I mean, I almost want to become a Scientologist because it's so outrageous and stupid, like, you know, but if
we tried, it's worse than
if you believe really origin
story. It's expensive.
Well, right. If you buy that, then by extension, you can't criticize Christianity or any other religion.
Right. Right.
Like, there's all of these origin stories are no more ridiculous than the next.
Absolutely true.
So, I mean, I've got a couple of questions, but the first you mentioned there are seven tenets.
Yes.
Your,
the Satanic Temple.
Yes, indeed, there are.
What are those tenets? I mean, we should know.
Two fewer than the Church of Satan, just we're really getting it done.
You're a lot more efficient.
Boiling it down.
Thank you. I haven't memorized them chapter and verse, so I'm
that
really
actually makes me really glad. I don't know, but it's like, oh, good. Like, that smacks of less zealotry than having them like, oh, of course, I have them tattooed here on my forearm.
I don't go that far. Let me just.
No problem.
I just wanted to while we're giving John the moment to look things up. Your vocabulary thrills me, and I just want to let you know, like, I'm just so delighted
Did you just do the Satanic Temple equivalent of, oh, you're so well spoken?
No, it was more like, wow, he really knows scripture. Like, that's how I felt. Yeah. Like, it's just like,
well, thank you. I'm a recovering copywriter, so.
Real recognize real.
Or as I like to call it, failed novelist school.
All you gotta do is just find a job in game design. That's all I'm saying.
So the seven tenets, one should strive to act with compassion and empathy towards all creatures in accordance with reason. That's the first. The second is the struggle for justice is an ongoing and necessary pursuit that should prevail over laws and institutions.
Word. Okay.
Like that.
The third is one's body is inviolable and subject to one's will alone.
Yeah.
Mm.
Number four is the freedoms of others should be respected, including the freedom to offend. To willfully and unjustly encroach upon the freedoms of another is to forego your own. Beliefs should conform to our best scientific understanding of the world, and we should take care never to distort scientific facts to fit our beliefs. Six is, people are fallible. If we make a mistake, we should do our best to rectify it and resolve any harm that may have been caused. And the seventh is, every tenet is a guiding principle designed to inspire nobility in action and thought. The spirit of compassion, wisdom, and justice should always prevail over the written or spoken word.
I don't think I've ever agreed with a set of rules so completely before.
I feel like I need to give my money to the Satanic Temple. I mean that very genuinely, because, I mean, when before you got here, I had said that it was very much that my understanding of the Satanic Temple was that it was kind of like Unitarians, but with less
hippie.
With less hippie God stuff.
Right.
And
more heavy metal.
And to some degree, my problem with Unitarians is there's always something where I'm like, because they mentioned something about energy or powers
but
whatever.
Both have a very strong message of social justice.
And inclusivity.
This is
the first time I've heard a list of tenets and with which I've agreed wholeheartedly from start to finish.
I don't see any problem with any. I can see where I understand where people would disagree, and I disagree with them. Oh, so, I mean, I, right. you know.
I have a question. Are yeah. a lot of people in the Satanic Temple vegetarians or vegans?
We
or
do is, have vegetarians and vegans.
Is sure. the first, I understand the first, so the first tenet with the within reason or according to reason
right.
is where you can say, to my own understanding, according to reason, I can eat meat because meat is available, and my opting out isn't going to change much, but...
Right. I mean, there's certainly no obligation to, mm-hmm. you know, behave in any particular manner. As long as you're, you know, when you're out in public as a representative of the Satanic Temple, if you're within the realm of, you know, acting in the best mm-hmm. interest of the Seven Tenets, certainly you don't have to, you know, eat vegan to, you know. But again, if you, no one's going
if
to
chastise
you. If that's
what you want, yeah, it's not,
a hamburger, you
it's
know,
not
I mean,
a contest.
It's a personal choice. I mean, you know, virtually everything, excuse me, everything, you know, comes down to personal autonomy, you mm-hmm. know, with it as it relates to the application of the Seven Tenets.
Personal autonomy without the subjugation of others for
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, as, yeah.
Precisely. And that, you know, that's something that I've struggled with and thought about myself is, it's funny you mentioned being a Wiccan. I was raised mm-hmm. in a Wiccan household.
Really?
Hmm.
Yeah.
Are your parents still Wiccans?
No, my mom later converted to Catholicism, so my bullshit detector was pretty accurate from a very young age, you know.
She just really liked ritual. That's,
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of corollary, you know, there's between the two.
I was
It's not like Catholicism borrowed a lot from...
Yeah.
Pagan religions.
Right.
Wicca was the first religion that ever spoke to me in any way, because the only time I prayed the rosary a lot as a kid because I thought it was magic.
Right.
I asked my mom if I could forego food for Lent one year because I wanted to like get Jesus's powers, and she was like, that's not how it works. And like, but so like Wicca was like, oh, this makes sense to me in this sense. But I fell out of it when I was told very angrily by a group online that I couldn't be a real Wiccan if I didn't have a coven.
Oh, sure.
And that solitaries don't count. And it was like,
what's
the fucking point of this? This is just one more goddamn club I don't belong to. Like,
well,
you just
replace the Virgin Mary with Freya and they're...
Exactly.
Jesus
with Wolf. And then the Dianic Wiccans are like, oh, you like men? You're not allowed. And like, what is this? Like,
it's, and that sort of pushed me away from, you know, all forms of supernaturalism. But, mm-hmm. you know, while she was busy being a Wiccan, my mom was also a vegetarian. I mean, still is a vegetarian, has been mm-hmm. for 50 years.
Sure.
So my, you know, act of rebellion as a teenager was to just eschew, you know, anything that didn't have a mother, you know. So it was just meat, you know. Like, I'm amazed that I'm not dead.
I'm putting these eggs on the chicken so it knows.
Yeah, that's right.
See this? It remembers.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, as I grew older, I realized, you know, I just, you know, conscientiously it became more and more difficult to bear that burden. So I was actually a vegetarian myself for about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I broke and I went back to, you know, but then, you know, as I become more aware, I guess, of, you know, just our impact on the earth and, you know, and,
sure.
and in terms of bodily inviolability, you know, it seems remarkably and disgustingly full of, you know, human hubris to assume that animals shouldn't enjoy the same.
That's a really good point.
So, I'm debating it, I'm toying with it, I haven't committed to it yet because it's going to be a huge lifestyle change and my wife will probably leave me, and, you know, but I think, you know, it's, if you have the responsibility, you know, it's...
And you have a child and there's a whole conversation about whether or not you should raise a child.
Again, but that's, if I'll do nothing, his body doesn't belong to me, so if he... is of an age of consent and wants to be a vegan or a, mm-hmm. or only eat Slim Jims. I mean, whatever, dude.
Yeah.
It's your, you know.
So how does the concept of bodily autonomy when it comes to parenting? I mean, how do you handle that? I mean, to some degree, I mean, he's his own person and has his own rights, but he also is a little kid.
He'll be two in October.
Yeah, I mean, he's a baby.
He's a little guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, you know, for starters, and he'll, I hope he hears this when he's like, you know, 16 or something so he can yell at
me. I do too, actually.
I opted out of circumcision. And I think, you know, almost everyone that I've talked to within the Satanic Temple is just aghast at the notion that it still exists as an elective procedure. You know, certainly I think if you're a practicing Satanist, at least in the Satanic Temple vein, you would probably choose not to have your child circumcised. You know, I see absolutely no difference between that and, you know, female genital mutilation. It's, you know, it's totally unnecessary and it's we've been conditioned. I mean, it's a throwback to a religious ritual. You know, all the studies that I've read in relation to disease transmission and all of these sorts of things just fall flat on their face when presented with, you know, the actual evidence of, you know, looking at rates of, you know, intrauterine infections and all this stuff. It's like, no, this is because these Jewish dudes did it a long time ago, and we continue to, and it's this accepted standard, and, you know, well, don't you want them to look like you?
That's the only argument is tradition.
And body shaming. Like, well, this girl is not going to sleep with you. And so, you know, my response, well, if a girl is, like, turning away your amorous advances on the basis of your intact foreskin, that's not somebody that you should be sleeping with anyway. Yeah. Like, I hope I've instructed you well enough to, you know, disregard whoever. So I didn't have him circumcised. I don't believe in corporal punishment. I certainly would never raise a hand, you know, to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I guess it's everything else is just a learning curve as he ages.
If he got old enough and he was like, I don't like meat, I mean, then you don't feed him meat. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is, they get you, to some degree, I think when they're that little, you can't, you are responsible for them, and you can't be saying, well, I can't dictate what you want.
Right.
You're a baby. Well, no, you have to. Yeah, he's a baby.
Yeah, I mean, I do mandate, you know, obvious things like safety and, you know, making sure he's fed, you know, in whatever, you know, omnivorous diet and you know, enforcing bedtimes and stuff, but, you know,
you're saying you're a good parent, even though you're a Satanist.
Well, and I'm appearing on another show on next Sunday, I believe, that to discuss satanic parenting, which to me is like, you know, I mean,
just parenting,
right?
It's just parenting. So
it's, you know, I think, you know, as he gets older and, you know, he wants to make autonomous decisions, you know, my job, I think, as a parent, I think everyone's job as a parent ultimately should just be to facilitate to the best of your ability your kid becoming their own person.
And Tim does that too with his kids.
Happy, healthy, and well-balanced.
Yeah, Tim's youngest is still, you know, like pretty, you know, believes in God, right? And you guys are just letting him.
He's coasting more towards not.
But for a while he was, and you guys are just letting him.
He's finding his own.
Letting grandma take him to church.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
So I think most people who are listening are probably, the first thing that's going to come to mind when we talk about Satanic Temple and the fight kind of against religious interference is going to be representation in the form of a statue.
Oh, yes. The storied Baphomet statue.
In Detroit?
Well, it was unveiled in Detroit. Okay. It was originally intended to be placed on the Oklahoma City courthouse lawn.
That was where the fight started, right? Mm-hmm.
There was a Ten Commandments statue that was paid for privately and then placed on the, you know, Capitol grounds.
Mm-hmm.
So the Satanic Temple had the statue of Baphomet made, which is, you know, storied enough. The figure itself is pretty, you know, pretty.
It's cool. The
statue's amazing.
Yeah. It is.
I love the kids.
The two kids kneeling.
So happy and like they're like, oh, hello, Baphomet. Please tell us stories.
You know, it really actually it says. I always thought it was funny that the statue, you know, it's beautiful, and I mean no disrespect to the artist and or anything, but it's. Traditionally, Baphomet is portrayed with breasts.
Right.
And this one had a male torso, and I was kind of, you know, when they, because I had seen mock-ups of it and miniatures and all this stuff, and I thought, well, where's the tits on this
thing?
Isn't
that?
And, but it was because they didn't want to offend.
It's
because women's breasts
are so terrible.
No, it's not even so terrible. They're so alluring and entrancing hypnotic.
We can't have breasts in a statue.
Think.
Someone might lose control and try to fuck it.
You can't think about it. If I took my shirt off right now, we were all just sitting here topless. You couldn't handle it.
Seriously, if I could get the sheet off the Venus de Milo, I would bang her in a second.
And it's amazing to me that it was like, no, all right. Statue of Baphomet, we're good. Satanic rites, sure. No tits.
Right.
Like, we can have male nipples only showing on this statue.
And tits is where we draw the line.
And the thing is, I think that was a, you know, sort of a strategic decision made on the part of, you know, the executive ministry.
Sure.
Like, we might be able to squeeze this in if it's, you know, if we just take it down a peg, but tits, no way. Well, like, people are going to lose
it. And there's still nipples.
Right.
That's the best part. There's still nipples. There's just no curvature.
Like, picking your battles. And I feel like it's getting it done, getting it made, having it in a public place as a way of emphasizing if you're going to have religion in the United States government, it's not.
You don't get to pick one.
You don't get to pick and choose.
You don't get to pick Christianity. It can be anyone.
Yep.
And much as, you know, you don't think about it when you think, oh, well, of course it's Christianity. When you make that assumption, every single non-Christian person around you is being excluded in some way. And when this statue goes up, now you know how that feels.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, from the beginning, the notion was to complement and contrast the Ten Commandments monument. Not to be provocative or to in any way threaten, you know, the hegemony that Christianity enjoys in this country, but to say, hey, there's more people here than just, you know, adherents of Abrahamic faith. So, ironically enough, the Ten Commandments statue was later destroyed by a Christian who drove his car into it. And the Satanic Temple offered to, you know...
Prayer works!
Right, yeah.
I prayed for that so hard.
But the Satanic Temple actually offered to pay to have it repaired. Because there would be no point in having the Baphomet monument without the
Ten Commandments.
The Jason Ten Commandments, and of course they were flatly refused.
Of course they were. So, why would they accept your charity?
Right.
It's not like it's one of the tenets
really
of their faith.
That's really funny to know.
But the temple successfully won a lawsuit that it was determined that the state constitution forbade the monument, the Ten Commandments monument, to be present on the state house lawn. So... we rescinded our attempt to place the Baphomet monument because what's the point without it?
Yeah.
So we're now attempting to place it in, you know, some other cities we're looking at that have existing Ten Commandments monuments.
So is what the Satanic Temple really wants is separation of church and state?
More than anything.
And so then we want to be included is more of a way to, I mean, in some way to be provocative and say, And so your choices are include everyone or do nothing, include no one. And I like that. I think that atheists should be on the side of the Satanic Temple because we are on the same side in that we are fighting for the ability to, it's freedom from religion, not freedom of religion.
Absolutely,
and that's, you have the ability to fight that as a religion.
Right.
And as a recognized religion, you have the ability to fight that more than we do because we get less respect in that sense.
I did want to ask because we've skirted around this, but I think it would be good to explain what you mean when you talk about being a religion without a spiritual component. Because to me,
or a supernatural component,
without a supernatural component. Because to me, religion, part of religion is a supernatural component, but.
I think, you know, one of the assumptions that people have about religion is that, you know, the Abrahamic faiths hold a patent on what it means to have a religion. You know, we've sort of been, I think, brainwashed in that respect, that anything that's meaningful beyond our day-to-day existence, you know, has to incorporate some element of the unknown. And, you know, frankly, I think that's categorically false. I think, you know, there's, you know, to dust off this old chestnut, you know, there's magic everywhere, you know. It's just a matter of in how you're couching it and what terms. And I think, you know, for the members of the Satanic Temple, you know, we have all the things that make us look like a church. You know, we get together for fellowship on a regular basis. You know, we have shared experiences that drew us to that particular path. We have an aesthetic kind of that binds us together. And more than anything, I think we celebrate our status as our outsider status and our position as sort of not vulnerable people, but, you know, misunderstood, you know, assholes that are just rabble rousers, you know. So that's kind of, you know, when Christians adopt the attitude of humility and charity and all these falsehoods that they, you know, continually vomit forth, you know, that's the attitude of a Christian. That's, you know, you can't, it's the difference between quantitative and qualitative. You know, you can't, sure, you can go out and act like a Christian, and that's all well and good, and we're expected to accept that by virtue of your word without you doing anything demonstrative of an actual, you know, attitude of charity and humility.
You go to church every Sunday.
Right.
Yeah, but you beat your kids. Like,
right. But, you know, we're Satanists, you know, first and foremost, and, you know, the Satanic Temple has never made any attempt to apologize or explain away, you know, the fact that we do identify as a religion, because to us, our religion necessitates pursuing the separation of church and state and pursuing social justice issues. If the core of our religion is to be understood as personal autonomy, then the way that we worship is by guaranteeing that autonomy for everyone, because in that respect, we're sort of the existentialists of the satanic world. If every choice we make for ourselves, by proxy, we make for everyone else.
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Are you, recently, the Satanic Church, Temple of Minneapolis had a big sale.
Yes, we did.
And, what was the goal? I mean, beyond, like, fundraising.
Right. Well, I mean, primarily fundraising, of course, but also just visibility. Mm-hmm. Our chapter is relatively new. You know, we've been around just about a year now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know it was that new.
Yeah, it's one of the newest charters, I think, in the U.S. And, you know, so we wanted visibility, and we wanted an opportunity to show ecumenicism with, you know, the atheists, with the pagan mm-hmm. community, and just other, you know, religious bodies that don't necessarily get all the representation that they deserve, you know, within, you know, the Twin Cities area, which is, you know, let's face it, anywhere in the United States really is predominantly Judeo-Christian, so. Mm. And, you know, Magus has been Roger Williamson is an old friend of mine, I love him dearly, and,
That's Magus Books.
Yeah, Magus Books.
Dinky Town.
Yeah, in Dinky Town in Minnesota, in the Twin Cities.
And the current owners, Mela and Joseph Amara, are incredible human beings. They're just delightful, and they that location has been, you know, proselytizers will come by and hand out Bibles and shriek, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
So we thought, all right, you know, we're not opposed, you know, to use our sort of our cultural currency, I suppose, as Satanists, to, you know, maybe frighten fundamentalists. I'm fine with people misunderstanding our message and just seeing the word Satan and immediately wanting to go to war. In fact, I welcome that, you know, because in many situations that can, you know, the element of fear is sometimes useful. So mm-hmm.
It's the Scope Smoky trial. The only reason it happened is because they found a person who was willing to provoke it. It was done deliberately so that it would go to trial.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, without provocation, there won't be confrontation. Without confrontation, there won't be resolution.
Correct. Yeah,
it is. It's civil disobedience in the sense of, I mean, to some
cultural
degree.
Cultural disobedience.
Well, it's just fascinating. I was just watching a video today. I think Eric Knight posted it. No. Well, anyway, that was talking about like some of the civil disobedience that's going on right now, mm-hmm. and talking about how people, and this pisses me off a lot when people are like, you're protesting wrong because you're inconveniencing people. and this video gives a really convincing argument to say it's only when people that are inconvenienced that actual change happens.
Sure. Yes. I love when people are like, they shouldn't have been protesting at the Mall of America. People are just trying to shop. Right. You should have been protesting at the police station. It's like, well, see, at the police station, they don't give a fuck. Right. And at the mall, y'all are talking about it because you didn't get to go to your store.
That was the answer I gave to everybody that criticized it on Facebook. Yep. I was like, what are we talking about? We're talking about what they did wrong with their protest. No. We're talking about the protest.
Yep. Someone said, I'm really disappointed that Mall of America hasn't dropped the charges against, you know, some of the protesters. And my response was like, I think that civil disobedience, when you're committing an act of civil disobedience, you are acknowledging the fact that you are breaking your law mm-hmm. to prove a point and accepting that there might be legal repercussions for your act.
Welcoming them
because when you go to jail for protesting and you're nonviolent, especially.
I mean, I don't want to get too far off.
Well, no, that's
but the
I
mall,
agree. But
the
yeah.
mall suing him is a pretty serious dick.
Suing is different than pressing charges.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with people going to jail. If you're doing civil disobedience, you have to expect it.
Has the Satanic Temple been sued? Have you guys had any kind of legal actions or ramifications?
Oh yeah, I mean, there have been, you know, certainly attempts to stymie our progress, but
even just in the last year.
Oh, yeah. Chapter here?
Yeah, your chapter here.
Oh, no,
here.
We haven't met with any litigation, but I'm expecting that any day now, frankly.
Yeah. Let us know when it happens, because we will amplify and...
I would love anyone's assistance when that
always.
Day comes. Always. You know, our operating principle is always, you know, when and not if, mm-hmm. you know, because mm-hmm. it's just...
Prepare.
Minneapolis is, you know, obviously a very liberal city for the most part, so we've been met with, you know, a great deal of welcome, and, you know, from especially, you know, the Minnesota atheists.
Oh, good.
They've been fantastic. We've met them at Pride, and
they're great.
They
Minnesota
awesome.
Atheists are good folks.
They really are. Yeah.
If not welcome, at least polite.
That's
Minnesota.
Before we started recording, you were saying that different satanic temples around the country are met with varying levels of resistance, from atheist groups, because of the idea that, well, you're a religion and we're not religion. We're like anti-religion. And so therefore we can't be meeting the same goals, but we clearly are.
Well,
I mean,
I think some people, you know, there are people who are just anti-theist, and certainly, you know, that's fine. The Satanic Temple has never taken a position and said we're resolutely anti-theist. be a staunch believer if you care to, but just do it in the privacy of your own home or place of worship. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think the idea that we're at least willing to, you know, recognize, you know, not everyone is going to abandon their belief in a supreme being. I think, you know, there are some maybe more idealistic atheists that are like, fuck that. No, we need to, like, dismantle the whole, mm-hmm. you know, apparatus.
Tear it down!
Right. Yeah. Do you, are there people, and, I mean, do you feel like there are people in your congregation, however you want, whatever noun you wish to use to describe it.
Sure.
But for the Satanic Temple, whether Minneapolis or nationwide, that genuinely do, would consider themselves theists for Lucifer? I mean, in the sense that, like, that is their go-to supreme being, as it were?
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, I try to make a distinction within my chapter between members and allies. Mm-hmm. You know, members are almost exclusively atheistic. Mm-hmm. in their approach. Allies, you know, we have pagan allies, we have,
sure.
you know, I mean, we run the whole gamut in terms of our membership, but there are certainly allies who identify as theistic Satanists who have flocked to the banner of the Satanic Temple because it's drawing attention to, you know, shared concerns with other satanic groups, you know, like mm-hmm. even in some instances, the Church of Satan, mm-hmm. Temple of Set, some of these, you know, more sort of high profile, I guess.
More supernatural leaning.
Right.
To be kind.
I have a, you know, just an anecdote you might appreciate. A friend of mine who passed away, he, old punk guy, sure. like kind of a real Viking motherfucker.
Right.
he, when he was younger, would join abortion protesters
right.
with signs saying stop abortion, don't abort the Antichrist. because, you know, he you don't want to prevent that from happening. Like, we need that to right. bring about the end times and to advance our cause. And so there would be, you know, Christian religious abortion protesters like looking at a sign and looking at him and then just kind of leave.
That's awesome. Yeah,
because, I mean, it's kind of that same provocation, like, I also, with my religion, no.
Yeah. Oh,
no.
I can't go that far.
Yeah.
That's funny. Our one of the members of our executive ministry posted on one of our boards that they're planning a national protest against Planned Parenthood.
They always are.
And so they're talking about, you know, counter-protesting and, you know, what, you know, write some funny counter-protest signs on the thread below.
Yeah.
So, you know, my idea was just forced pregnancy increases church membership, but I think we might have to borrow the don't abort.
Do it.
That's fantastic.
I don't believe in the afterlife, but I'm telling you, that would make him happy.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Yeah.
He would get a chuckle out of that, for sure. Should we move on to five questions?
We probably.
Is it about that time?
It's that time.
All right.
I'm moderately well prepared.
Sweet.
I would love to have you on again and check in a year and see how things are going with the growth
We'd love to attend an event or something.
Yeah, we would love to work with you guys somehow.
For sure.
Yes.
I wanted to note that the bake sale proceeds were also going in our legal campaign against District 11. That was kind of our...
What is this? District 11?
Oh, yeah. Talk about that real quick. Yeah, before we...
So District 11 in 1993 decided to abandon HIV education because, and I quote, only gay kids get AIDS.
Which district is it? Like, where
Anoka
are...
Hennepin. So
of course, it's fucking Anoka Hennepin.
And I'm an alum of there, so growing up, I saw sort of how it became this dictatorship that it became, or this theocracy. So they abandoned HIV education and health class. They started a policy called, and I'm not making this up, I wish I was, but it was called No Homo Promo.
What?
Yeah.
And officially?
Well, I mean, that's how they would discuss it.
It's against homogenized milk, Molly. It's okay.
Sure, right. Sure.
That's what they meant. Yeah.
And so they launched this incredibly brutal campaign that was ultimately just short of a pogrom against, you know, gay kids or even kids that were perceived to be gay by their peers.
That's the thing. Just
so when they were
kids.
Bullied because of their sexual orientation or their perceived deviance from the normative cultural standards of heterosexual boning, they would, they would talk to administrators, they would talk to teachers, and the teachers were like, I can't talk about that. I'll lose my job. They can't address homosexuality as valid. They can't address it as being anything other than...
valid.
Than not... Right. So
remember Michelle Bachmann's district.
Yeah. I went to private school and it was like so good. I just
I went to public school, but I went in the inner city and it was all good.
Well,
I mean,
the plot gets so much more disgusting. There was a rash of teen suicides that was substantial enough to draw the attention of the U.S. Justice Department.
I remember that. Yeah. Yes.
And the Southern Poverty Law Center.
That wasn't that long ago.
No, that was not. About 2006, I think, is really when it all started to kind of come to a head. The district was put under the oversight of the Justice Department, who said, you have to do something. This is fucked up. These gay kids are dying in record numbers because of your policies.
Clearly.
You need to readdress your bullying policy and you know, make some attempts to rectify it. The school board, I can't remember
the
fucking guy's name. But.
And this is the district that was involved. I know when they did redistricting, because they wanted to make sure Michelle Bachmann would win, and they did a bunch of other fucking terrible shit.
Yeah, man.
So Tom Heidemann is the current school board chair, and he is in bed with a group now known as the Child Protection League.
Sure.
They used to be the Parents Action League.
Yeah.
They are a fundamentalist Christian, openly fundamentalist, anti-gay group. So staunchly anti-gay, in fact, that they're identified by the Southern Poverty Law Center as an active hate group in Minnesota.
Yeah.
And their members are informing district policy by virtue of the sway that they hold over the school board. As a matter of fact, they door knock in campaigns for these people.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a screening recently of a documentary called Same Difference that was about I'd highlighted the death of Justin Auberg, mm-hmm. who was a student at an Oakland high school.
Yeah.
I've actually been speaking to his mother quite a bit, and she's very supportive of our efforts to, you know, seek justice for these kids. But, I asked during the question and answer period of this documentary, his mother, you know, to what extent did the Justice Department investigate the link between the Parents Action League and the school board? Because there's obviously a conflict mm-hmm. of interest if a public school is being, you know, having a policy dictated by a fundamentalist religious group. Jefferson Fitek, who started the first GSA or Gay Straight Alliance in the district, who's an absolute titan of a man. That dude is I don't believe in this sort of thing, but he needs to be sainted immediately. He very plainly said there didn't need to be any investigation because it was as plain as day. The Parents Action League was very forthright. Yep, we offer campaign donations and we tell these people, if you don't do what we say, we stop door knocking for you. You lose your seat on the school board. So the Justice Department and the Southern Poverty Law Center were powerless to do anything because there's no law on the state or national level that forbids an active hate group doing demonstrable harm to a minority group from offering material assistance to politicians.
Right,
you know,
because
you
money trumps everything in this world.
It's money speech.
Right. So what the Justice Department did do was recommend that they, in an effort to readdress their policy, they sort of rewrite some of the language in their bullying policy to be a little more inclusive. What they actually did was adopt language that already existed in the Minnesota Human Rights Act. So it allowed them just enough wiggle room to continue to ignore it. Moreover, they asked them to start an anti-bullying task force, which they did. The anti-bullying task force was headed by none other than Tom Heidemann, who is as the president of the school board. So everyone's holding hands, and everyone is doing, I mean, aggressively trying to single out gay students and make them either uncomfortable enough to leave the district, or, you know, in the case of Justin Auberg, to stand his futon frame on end and hang himself so that his brother can find him the next morning. And it's absolutely fucking disgusting. These people are, you know, I went there. I know what it's like. I know, you know, I'm a hetero person. But
you're
I was
other.
A weird kid.
So, yep.
I can't even begin to imagine my friends who came out, you know, I mean, I'll be 40 in spring, so I'm not like a, you know, very young, but I'm not, you know, exceedingly old. However, being open about your sexual orientation is, you know, a relatively recent phenomenon.
Yes, it was when I'm 37. I mean, it's the same kind of thing. And even in I went to a very inclusive private school where it was founded by hippies and had no religion. And like
the only
even then,
non-religious.
Yeah, private. And even then, like the kids that were gay, it was like it wasn't a big deal, but it was kind of like it was still very, very unusual for someone to identify as even bisexual. I mean, that was.
I cannot imagine the horror of. I mean, adolescence is an open. open sewer, but being a gay teen in that district, I mean, you're being hunted. They're literally putting these children's lives at risk. And what rankles me the most is, you know, the conservative assumption that homosexuality is all about sex. There's this fixation on the sex act.
Yeah.
Right.
To me, that's the most absurd. What you're telling these kids, with whose brains are forming and they're learning how to form attachments and how to trust people, you're telling these fucking kids that you're not worth loving, and you cannot love someone else. So you're not just saying your lifestyle and your sexual proclivities are weird and gross and they make us uncomfortable. They're categorically saying everything that you think you're worth doesn't mean shit.
Yeah.
They're devaluing these kids as human beings. They're saying you're less than everyone else.
My mom's a lesbian, wife, kids together. She said, I don't know what they think is happening. Like, I don't think it's like we're swinging from the chandeliers, having crazy lesbian sex parties all the time.
Right.
I am far too busy raising kids and working a job.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, what? I don't know what they think is happening, but like 99% of the normalcy and my day-to-day worries is the same as theirs.
Well, and so your brother is trans, and I'm trying to think of how it was for him to come out to your mom, being raised in a house by a lesbian in a very liberal area of Minneapolis, and it was hard for him. Now imagine you're a trans kid in Anoka with fucking Christian parents, and like, we watched him cry. I mean, we know, and he had every opportunity for like the best possible. Yeah.
Before I moved to Minneapolis, I lived in Osseo.
Okay.
Not far from Anoka.
Yep.
Hostile to weird kids.
Oh yeah.
Like it's not.
Hostile to cis hetero geek kids.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
the only thing about you that's all that other in that sense was that you were overweight and you liked comics. I mean, it wasn't even that.
I mean,
for fuck's sake.
Well, my mom came out in the town before I moved out, and that was problematic a little bit. But yeah, I don't. Fuck Anoka. Like, I feel sorry for anyone.
How can we help? Is there a way that we can help you guys? I mean, are you fundraising for legal costs? And
we actually. This is something big enough that it's starting to draw the attention of the national body.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, historically, campaigns that are supported by the Home Office, so to speak, are obviously more enjoy a greater rate of success than grassroots local kind of things. I'm in the process of, I'm talking to, I've been in touch with a gentleman named Andy Berkey, who's a reporter for The Independent. And he's been following these fuckers for 15 years. So he's seen, he's got names, he's got records, he's got, I've got some deep throats in the district who are willing to offer me documentation as to, you know, their tactics to bully outspoken educators who are standing up for these kids. I mean, people are literally being threatened with their jobs.
Yeah.
You know, these dirty fags, you know, you got to shut them up. So, and they've used, you know, language like that in the presence of...
Oh, that doesn't surprise me at all. That doesn't surprise me at all.
So I've got allies in the district, like teachers, you know, and you know, people that are active in the school board or at least trying to inform policy. We're steadily amassing this mountain of evidence. So what we're trying to do now, Tammy Aubert, who, you know, her son took his own life because of the district, and I've maintained from the beginning that these kids were murder victims. They didn't kill themselves. They were murdered.
Yeah.
They didn't have the capacity to, you know, really understand the finality of their actions. They were fucking murdered by a very hostile school district that looked at, you know, it was life unworthy of life. It was exactly what Hitler would have said.
Mm-hmm.
So to add the most amount of insult to an already horrific injury, the culmination of the legal trial resulted in the district paying out undisclosed sums, which I've later come to discover were somewhere in the tune of $300,000 per family, to children who had endured extensive bullying. The kids who took their own lives, their families got nothing.
What?
Oh.
Because to do so would have required the district to admit culpability, which they resolutely refused to do and fought to the fucking Supreme Court. We're looking at an angle by which we can pursue civil litigation against the teachers whose names we have, who perpetuated or facilitated this kind of behavior, and in many cases, you know, if they didn't openly encourage it, they certainly turned a blind eye. We're also looking at possible litigation against school board members, and possibly starting some type of campaign to introduce legislation that would make it difficult, if not impossible, for religious institutions to offer campaign donations or man hours to organizations that are directly related to vulnerable children, you know,
public schools, public
anything that's within the realm of public institutions. Yeah. I mean, certainly if it, you know, if a church group wants to raise money to put a new copse of trees in the local park, I mean, have at it, but these are kids we're talking
about
here.
Yeah.
So there needs to be some way to sort of,
And here's the thing. These are kids that already get forced indoctrination every Sunday.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They should be there. The school is not the place for that. Church has more than enough opportunity to get to these kids.
Yeah, man.
Well, I have actually an internal document from the district that was just handed out recently within, you know, with the last school year. It was given to all the librarians in the district, and it specified you're only allowed now to purchase books from these particular vendors. The origin of the document is of unspecified, you know, no one knows who issued it, who drafted it, but it was on District 11 letterhead, and it said A, B, and C, you can buy from these people. They're reading it, incidentally, so the district has made many attempts with, you know, with the help of the school board to, if not outright ban, but at least cause enough consternation about certain titles to make them impossible for students to read in school. You know, of course, the classics, you know, a lot of the, you know, Huckleberry Finn and Knight and all, you know, right?
I just think that's so hilarious that they would have a problem with Huckleberry Finn. And the main reason for banning Huckleberry Finn is because of the use of the word nigger.
Yeah.
Which, of course, even though the book is completely anti-slavery, you know, why would a school district that's that conservative have any issue with that?
Well,
with
he's
that
not
word?
Fag Jim. Like, that's the difference.
Well, I mean, the hysterical part about all of that was when I went to Coon Rapids High School, that was around the time of the construction of the 610 Bridge. And, you know, so the denizens of Coon Rapids would talk about those people coming into Coon Rapids, meaning black students.
Yep.
So in my junior year, we had a actual Nazi skinhead gang in the roaming the halls of the high school. Ironically enough, they attempted to recruit me. And I was like, good luck and everything. But, you know, I'm going to skateboard and, you know, dye my mohawk blue. So, and they, you know, the district did nothing to stop them or to identify them. Three black students in my school junior year, they were immediately identified as a gang despite not hanging out together outside of school.
What?
Yep, singled out. I mean, it was absurd. You had to laugh to keep from crying.
Yeah.
And that is continuing just on a different, you know, now Coon Rapids is fully integrated. So they have to, you know, direct their conservative, you know, weird sort of moral authority somewhere.
Fear of the different.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No,
our hatred of black people can't be tolerated because we have so many black people here and represented.
Right.
So who do we direct that to now?
Right.
Yeah.
So is there a place that, I mean, if people are listening, they want to help, is there a place, I mean, do you guys have a GoFundMe? Is there, I mean, obviously, fundraising, you know, there's got to be something that
we can include a lot of links and information.
But I'm thinking, like, in the future, fundraising opportunities or things that we can do to help. I mean, I this is something that I believe super passionately in. I mean, it's our family. It's all of us.
Yeah.
We all have people in our lives that we love and are related to.
Or even not. It shouldn't.
I know it shouldn't, but my point is, like, it's more
personal.
It's more personal than just rights.
Well, I think, you know, once when the time is right, and again, I need to, you know, discuss this with the executive ministry and see if we can take this to a national level, and if it's something that, you know, I'm certainly it warrants attention, and I have no doubt that they'll agree with me. When the time is right, we'll have a dedicated, either a GoFundMe page or something that will, you know, allow us to facilitate legal representation, you know, potentially maybe starting with Tammy Auberg. She's been discredited. You know, in fact, when I met with her the first time, I offered to facilitate her lawsuit as a silent partner on behalf, you know, the Satanic Temple, all chapters.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, no, I actually, you know, because obviously we're the Satanic Temple and we're talking about your son's suicide.
Yeah.
I don't want to,
Right.
You know, that's
silent partner.
Really,
yeah.
Sort of a touchy thing. And she said, "No, you. I want you to take this. I'll be your silent partner. I'll give you all the information I have, everything I've learned over the last, you know, 7 years. You go after them because they won't listen to me." They said every time she shows up at a school board meeting, "Oh, what? She's been told to get. It's been 6 years, 7 years. Shouldn't you be over it by now?"
Get over your son's suicide.
Yeah.
Your son's suicide because he was bullied to death.
Yeah. By like members of the school.
And we haven't changed anything. We haven't changed the circumstance.
No.
Done anything to address it.
We continue to maintain this atmosphere of such outright hostility that, you know, the children are still taking their own lives. So she's been so thoroughly discredited. She's been called a conspiracy theorist. She's been the object of ire and consternation from community members who think she's doing it for attention. She can't get over it. She's
doing it for attention. Attention for the
fact that her son was
Jesus Christ.
And so that deserves a little attention.
Yeah. So the idea was use your countercultural weight as, you know, a fulcrum to, by which to tilt the scales.
We don't have a lot of weight, but let us know.
Let us know what we can do to help, and we'll
I appreciate that a great deal.
Sure.
I mean, it absolutely is something that needs to be...
I'll have you know, we raised over $500 for other...
We raised over $1,000.
You know,
we raised over $1,000 for Camp Quest last year.
There was,
be real.
The spotlight, I think, is going to shift again onto the district, because with the release of Same Difference, which is the film that chronicles the tragic death of Justin Auberg, and there's another that if anyone knows a distributor, the film Same Difference is looking for distribution. What they'd like to do, members of the GSA chapters from various schools in the district would like Same Difference to be required viewing for all staff, which I think is an absolutely phenomenal idea. They're, to my knowledge, their education in regards to the educator's education in regards to sexual orientation and LGBT related bullying and this sort of thing is a PowerPoint presentation that lasts about 3 or 4 minutes.
Of course.
Well, they don't have any vested interest in fixing the problem.
That's just a check mark on a list.
Not only would they like
in fact,
it to
they
be,
don't want
to
fix the problem.
No. So not only would they like it to be required viewing for teachers and potentially students, but moreover, they want the film to have national distribution. There's also a film coming out called Normal Valid Lives that's being produced by a gentleman named Jan Rotter. And I actually met with him and interviewed with him regarding the district. He's a fantastic guy, very passionate about this cause. And so along with... Jefferson Fitek and Tammy Auberg and some other folks that are out trying to get these films into the spotlight, it's going to open a dialogue again. So we're kind of waiting now for the pendulum to swing in the other direction, and when we have sufficient, when all the moving pieces are in place, that's when we're going to launch, I think, or at least I hope to have the blessing of the executive ministry to launch a massive national campaign against these people, because I said unequivocally they're murderers. There's no other way to say it. They're murderers.
They willfully caused the death of another human being. That's what that is.
Yep. Yeah. Through negligence.
I'm glad you mentioned it because
for sure.
It's
important to talk about.
It is important to talk about.
So that was the bake sale.
The bake sale!
Yeah.
So we were planting a seed to start raising funds, so that we could put that towards, a legal fund and then buy promotional materials to sell to raise more money and so on.
Sure.
It's an amazing cause. I mean, it's true, hard social justice.
Well, if you know any film distributors, please comment or email us. You can email
we'll get
any of us at geeks.god.
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure.
And I have to say, as an aside, just the reception that we received from you folks and from the atheist community, from the geek community, from everybody has been fucking unreal. It's been, when I started this chapter, it was, I met my first two members by accident, literally. they were friends of mine. But
crashed their car into theirs.
We had gone out for coffee, and so what have you been up to? I was starting the chapter of the Satanic Temple, and they're like, oh yeah, we're members. And I said, well, fucking A, all right, let's get going. So from there, it just snowballed, and hearing stories from other chapters who are fighting the good fight and receiving so much, flack, to be welcomed the way that we have been in this community has been absolutely amazing. I can't thank you guys enough. Between the you guys and the atheists and the pagans and all these concerned parties and the the LGBT community, Pride was the most absurd experience.
Pride was amazing this year.
That was incredible.
Well, I mean, I think social justice knows no religion. That, I mean, it should exist outside.
It's a human cause.
Any religion should want it, I guess, is the real perspective.
People
that,
should, yeah, right.
It shouldn't matter what religion you are, you should want it.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I think, you know, more than anything, the Satanic Temple wants to help marginalized people be able to, you know, formulate their own identities without interference from, you know, bodies that have really no business informing the opinions or consent of, you know, I mean, that's just silly. So.
Yeah, especially non-members, non-consenting peoples.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I think now we'll five questions.
You think?
Five,
should we get to them now?
All right, now we'll do it. For real this time. No, all it's right. Totally great. Tim, do you want to start us off with our new five questions?
Question number one, what is a movie you'll stop and watch anytime it's on?
And I have to pick one?
Yeah. You know, we've been talking for an hour.
Yeah. All right.
What sticks out?
I am a huge horror fan. I go to Crypticon every year. I love horror films. I would have to say the 1990 remake of Night of the Living Dead with Tony Todd and Tom Towles, and that is probably the most, between my best friend and I, the most quoted film. I mean, I could probably stand up and recite it for you right now.
Awesome.
I've seen it hundreds and hundreds of times. Awesome. I wore out a VHS copy of it once because I would fall asleep every night to it. So,
I did that.
Yeah, it's kind of a lullaby movie.
That's like a bragging point that like kids will never be able to have.
Yeah,
like,
it's only for us.
I wore
people,
out my cassette tape. Like, I wore out my record. I wore out my
I remember
VHS.
My Nine Inch Nails cassette broke. I wore out my streaming.
I wore out my Netflix account. It'll be like I used up all my bandwidth.
Question two, what is your geekiest or most prized possession?
Ooh, I have a lot of shit. I guess two things that are pretty awesome that I'm relatively proud of. I have the press kit from the David Cronenberg Naked Lunch from the premiere, signed by William Burroughs.
What?
Oh, that's pretty great.
Nice.
What?
So I have that.
That's pretty great.
And I have an original copy of the Creepshow graphic novel signed by Tom Savini.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's so cool.
So those are like two,
like a huge,
two of the
Stephen King is like my best favorite thing in the whole world. So that's
and I was
fucking
torn
amazing.
Because I had Tom Savini's. I've got all his makeup books.
Yeah.
And I thought, which one do I bring? Because he was at Crypticon.
Yeah.
Which one do I bring to have him sign? And I, you know, he's a makeup artist. I don't particularly care about his technique. What I care about is like, you know, his work in Creepshow.
Absolutely.
The Lonesome Death of Jordy Verrill was like gave me
so
nightmares
good.
For fucking years.
So good.
So I thought I'm gonna bring this, and it was awesome. And I was, you know, I was like total fanboy, couldn't really talk, and just kind of So yeah, those are definitely two of them.
That's great.
Great.
Question number three is, what supernatural, magical, or all powerful being do you wish was real?
Well, Lucifer, obviously.
But that would mean that, like, God is real and, like, the whole...
That's a good question, yeah. If Lucifer is real, is God real?
Let's rephrase that.
Sure.
Call it by anything you want, Azazel or Apollyon.
Okay.
Any of the sort of the contrarians, you know, the heavenly contrarians. So Lucifer is embodied by the...
Sure.
Know, the Miltonian ideal, the gentleman bastard.
We're snapping our fingers and making a fictional character real. It could just be Lucifer. Why not?
Sure. I would love that.
All right.
Okay, so say religion is gone.
Yes.
What is the biggest problem that now faces humanity?
I don't, religious people wouldn't have a reason to pretend to be decent to one another anymore.
Do you think that the people who, so what percentage of people who are, let's just say Christian, are being good to each other simply because the Bible thing says, do you think?
Because there's a reward, because there's a sort of eat it for them?
You know, my contention has always been that if you take away the concept of a reward, of course no one's going to, you know, and I'm sure you often hear it too, like, well, you don't believe in God, why aren't you raping and murdering?
Where do you get your morals?
How do you adjust your moral compass? So that to me insinuates that all of these
all of these Christians are going to go out and rape and murder as soon as there's no religion.
Like, all it takes is a you know, a 3,000-year-old text that's been revised about 150 times in like 17 different languages.
Written in four voices.
Right. To keep you from going out and raping and murdering. Like, I think there would be this enormous crisis of non-faith. You know, there would be irreligious people who were suddenly forced in that position who didn't know how to deal with, you know, their place in the world, and they, you know, so there would be potentially, I don't, you know, monstrous civil unrest and
I look forward to the moral high ground.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm on it now.
I mean, that's one possible scenario.
It
would be like, you know, the proverbial White House lawn scenario. You know, there would be so many possible huge, you know.
Earth is Woodstock, like 66 Woodstock, or whatever.
Right.
Okay, question number 5, what is your favorite quote?
Well, a lot of those too, but off the top of my head, probably William Burroughs said, "Stay out of churches, son. The only thing they have a key to is the shit house. And swear to me, you'll never wear a lawman's badge."
Oh, I love it. I have this image of you because your son, like, laying your son down at night and like saying that every night as like a good night, son, and like saying that quote. Yeah.
Actually, his middle name is Burroughs.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So he's on the right path, I hope.
I'm at least, well, the left path.
I tell you what, as an atheist raising a child, it's like, how do I avoid the rebellious stage where they go totally right-wing Christian?
Right. Yeah. Well, that's the running joke, is like, we're going to, you know, people tell my wife and I, well, he'll be Alex B. Keaton, you know.
I'm trying to figure out what rebellion I can steer him into.
Right.
When I was 13, my mom was cutting and dyeing my mohawk for me. And you know, she was out at that point, and we were just moving to Minneapolis, and my grandma said, "Well, how is he going to rebel? What is he going to do? Join the army? Vote Republican?" Like, that never happened, so who knows?
And, you know, I tell everybody that asks, like, if he wants to play football and go to church and get circumcised, I will take him to do all those things. You know, it's incumbent upon me as a... you know, as a good father.
It's his choice. That's what matters.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Volition is key.
Well, John, it's been a pleasure having you on as a guest. We really appreciate you coming down and talking to us about the Satanic Temple of Minneapolis and all the all the horrible shit that's happening in District 11 and your efforts to get some justice out of that. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. This was far and away the most fun I've had at one of these, and you know, since I've been asked to do that.
That's great. That's what we hope for.
We're pretty great. We're pretty funny.
We don't want to brag
super,
too much, but
super entertaining.
Kind of big deals.
Basement studio is very luxurious. You can tell we've really made it.
Let's not break our arms jerking each other off. All right?
I've already done that once, and it wasn't a pleasant ER experience. So let's just
So how did this happen? Anyway.
All right. We've been Geeks Though God. If you have any questions or comments or anything to contribute, if you happen to maybe know someone that might be interested in Same Difference and maybe getting that some attention on that or some of the stuff that's happening in District 11, or if you want to check out the Satanic Temple of Minneapolis, do you have a Facebook page, website?
We do have, you can email us at tstmpls@gmail.com. Alternately, we have the Facebook page, which is just the Satanic Temple Minneapolis chapter, and we meet bi-weekly at Grumpy's downtown on Washington.
That's a great choice.
I did a wedding there.
Grumpy's has awesome. Really, really good mini corn dogs.
You and tater tots,
And they've been welcoming to our huge group of weirdos. So just check.
They're welcoming
Facebook
to all
page.
Weirdos, man. Yeah. I love that place.
Good place for weirdos.
Yeah.
Feel free to send us your answers to our 5 questions. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. And as usual, we will see you next Tuesday. Bye. How's a statue of Baphomet like my wife?
How?
No tits.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
You know the best part about gay bars is there's like no line in the women's room.